to this seventh seminar in the Institute of Race Relations series on racism, human rights, and the war on terror. Our discussions so far have explored the new speech crimes of condoning terrorism, the European Union's moves towards a surveillance society and creeping criminalisation of refugees, the links between Abu Ghraib and the sadistic norms of the American prison system, the use or abuse of intelligence, and the implications of Guantanamo for human rights worldwide. Matt Carr is a writer with long-standing interest in conflict. His first book, My Father's House, explored his own family history through the turbulence of an anti-colonial struggle. And his forthcoming, Unknown Soldiers, which is out in August, traces the 120-year history of terrorism in the West. As he was ending Unknown Soldiers, How Terrorism Transformed the Modern World, Matt Carr became aware that the horror story of Eurabia, a weak, decadent, liberal Europe vulnerable to Islamic conspiracy and conquest, had left the realm of Edwardian science fiction and was gaining widespread contemporary currency, which now seems to be bringing it dangerously close to mainstream respectability. Eurabia suddenly everywhere, from Start the Week on Radio 4 this morning to Melanie Phillips' bile-filled new book, Londonistan. Matt.
Thanks very much, Amanda. And I want to thank the Institute for inviting me here to speak to you today. And what I want to do is sketch out for you what the nightmare consists of and give a brief account of the ideological agendas that I think it serves and reflects. At first sight, the Arabian nightmare is an extension of the Islamic threat narratives that became prevalent after the Cold War, more or less. But the concept of Eurabia is much more recent. As Amanda was saying, I first came across the term while I was researching a book on terrorism. I was on the final chapter at that time. And I came across an article by the right-wing Canadian columnist Mark Steyn on the violence in Paris and France last year. When I first heard the word, I thought that it was some kind of crude, right-wing, ironic term to describe this idea of a new European Arab entity that they see sprouting up everywhere. I've since discovered that there's a lot more to Eurabia than irony or sarcasm. So what is Eurabia and what is the nightmare? Essentially, Eurabia is a vision of a European future which fuses past and present into a nightmarish scenario of an Islamicized Europe that is already in the throes of committing cultural suicide. What will the nightmare consist of? To imagine the Eurabian future, you have to look back at the history of Islam the way that Eurabian proponents see it. In their view, the Islamic past is nothing but a history of violence, domination, the oppression of religious minorities, and unending jihad aimed at the subjugation of the entire world. Nothing new about that. The notion of an Islamic threat to Christendom has been around for centuries. Eurabians like to refer to key dates from history when describing the contemporary Islamic threat to Europe, even if they tend to do so in a manipulative and tendentious manner. They will talk about the Islamic wars of conquest in the 7th century, the defeat of the Ottoman armies at the siege of Vienna in 1683, to demonstrate how Islam constitutes an ancestral fanatical enemy that has always been around and has now returned in a new guise to complete its historic mission. What is that mission to Eurabians? It's nothing less than the final subjugation of European civilization. A mission which Eurabians now insist is being undertaken not by the dreadful Turk, the Moor, or the Saracen, but by Muslim immigrants who are flooding into Europe and inexorably Islamicizing the continent. According to the worst-case scenarios, by the end of the 21st century, some people even say by halfway through the 21st century, most of Europe's cities will have been completely overrun by Arabic-speaking foreign immigrants. This population will be so politically and culturally powerful that it will be able to impose the most reactionary Sharia law on much of the continent. Christianity and Judaism will have ceased to exist, or they will have been reduced to a state of dimitude or subject status. The worst case scenarios posit the final triumph of barbarism, the creation of an Islamic fundamentalist super state in Europe, in which women will be obliged to wear the burqa, churches and cathedrals will be knocked down and replaced by mosques and minarets, theatres, cinemas, secular cultural institutions will cease to exist, and Europe's Judeo-Christian heritage will have been completely obliterated. Once the Islamic subjugation of Europe has been achieved, the continent will become a base for jihadist operations, as they like to call them, directed against the United States and Israel. Other Eurasian scenarios predict a future of endless civil war within Europe, in which European cities to turn into little Beiruts and little Fallujahs. The internet is filled with right-wing sites that already see the emergence of Eurasia in what they call Muslim no-go zones in European cities. These no-go zones are zones of lawlessness, potential terrorism, and cultural backwardness, and they provide glimpses of what the Arabian nightmare will look like to these people. As I said, the Islamic threat narratives are not new in themselves. The European far right has been making the same kind of predictions for years. What is new is the way that Eurasia has entered the mainstream and has become common currency across a whole swathe of opinion that spans European neo-fascism, anti-Islamic ideologues, secular liberals, and influential conservative historians. Some proponents of the Eurasian nightmare who've used the term, they include people like Melanie Phillips, the Daily Mail columnist and the author of Londonistan. They include neoconservative historians such as Bernard Lewis and Niall Ferguson. Lewis has predicted that Europe will be Islamic by the end of the 21st century. Ferguson has written a few articles on this subject, including a widely reproduced article last year called Eurasia? In which he talked about the de-Christianization of Europe. A lot of Eurasian writers are found in the United States. There's a whole network of think tanks, very well-funded right-wing and conservative think tanks, the Heritage Institute, the American Enterprise Institute, the Free Congress Foundation, a whole network of them. The Eurasian consensus is widely discussed in various articles by these published by these foundations. The Eurasian consensus also includes the ferociously Islamophobic ideologue Arianna Falachi. It includes American conservatives such as the Catholic theologian George Weigel, and it includes most notably Robert Spencer. I don't know if any of you know him. He's the author of a number of very hostile books on Islam, jihad, and terrorism. Most of them do the same thing from his point of view. And he also is the editor of two anti-Islamic websites called Dhimmi Watch and Jihad Watch. I've got here a little quote to give you an idea of Spencer, and in fact the whole Eurasian consensus. I've got one or two quotes here. Spencer tends to present himself as a sort of principled opponent of Islamic violence. But basically he sort of conflates everything together, so that essentially Islam is violence, is terrorism, etc. This is what he said in a book he wrote called A Guide for Catholics. Islam itself is an incomplete, misleading, and often downright false revelation, which in many ways directly contradicts what God has revealed through the prophets of the Old Testament and through his son Jesus Christ, the Word made flesh. He is Catholic, by the way, Robert Spencer. For several reasons, Islam constitutes a threat to the world at large. And this is what one of Spencer's readers said about one of his books. Robert Spencer's The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades is what I am currently reading, and it is great. Ragheads are presented in this book with infallible truth for what they actually are, subhuman psychotics. I'd say they might even rise to the high level of Dostoevsky's satanic creatures of that writer The Possessed, since these ragheads are either totally psychotic or actually Satan himself in some semblance of human form. You get the gist. This is the world that Eurasia comes out of, basically. All the commentators, whether they are the Spencers, the Melanie Phillipses, the hard liberals, the Catholics, they all share a similar perception of Europe as a doomed and decadent continent that is presently committing cultural destruction, self-destruction, by allowing the continued entry of Muslim immigrants into Europe. These immigrants are supposedly incapable of assimilation or adaptation to Europe's Judeo-Christian and or liberal secular values. These concepts are often mixed up together, so you find sort of Christians defending secularism, secularists defending the Christianization of Europe and so on. It doesn't seem to make much difference with them. The main threat to all these things is Islam. This cultural incompatibility is made even more dangerous in their view by the demographic explosion that they see as being part of the Eurasian nightmare. Some Eurasian scenarios talk about declining European fertility rates as evidence of Europe's affluence and decadence. Mark Steyn and Niall Ferguson have made a big thing about this, suggesting that as Europe's population becomes older and families grow smaller, the higher fertility rates in the Islamic world will automatically empower Islam and bring the Muslim hordes flooding in even greater numbers to take over the continent. Listen to all this, you might well think the Arabian nightmare is a paranoid science fiction fantasy. It is that. But some Arabians have argued that the nightmare is not just... Some Arabians have argued that this nightmare is not just a question of cultural incompatibility. In other words, the nightmare won't happen just because there are lots of Muslim immigrants in Europe. Something more sinister and dangerous than that is actually a conspiracy. The term Eurasia was initially coined by an Egyptian-born British citizen named Giselle Littman, a very right-wing Zionist who writes under the name of Fat Yor, or Daughter of the Nile. She was previously known as a historian and the author of two books on the Islamic treatment of religious minorities under the Caliphate. Her view of the Islamic past appears to have been, I haven't read those books, so I can't comment on them with much authority, but her view of the Islamic past appears to have been as relentlessly hostile as her presentation of Islam in the present. She wrote a book called Eurabia, the Euro-Arab Axis. In it, she describes Eurabia as a conscious political project. Seeds were sown in the European Community's establishment of the Euro-Arab Dialogue, or the EAD, in 1973. This, to most people who are not Bad Europe, was a long-time programme, initially conceived by France, that was supposed to forge closer political, cultural and economic links between Europe and the Arab world. Some of these aims were enshrined in the so-called Europe-Mediterranean Dialogue, which began in Barcelona in 1995, known as the Barcelona Process. Yor took the name Eurabia from a French cultural journal of the same name that was published in the mid-70s, even though no European organization has ever used that name to describe the project that she outlines. According to Yor, all these developments were part of a long-term project by European politicians and Arab leaders, which aimed to culturally and economically reconfigure the whole of the continent. In her view, this began during the 1973 oil crisis, when European leaders undertook to promote Muslim immigration into Europe and allowed the European media, universities and schools to be converted into channels for Arab propaganda and historical disinformation. I'm sure you've all noticed that. Anyway, in her view, basically what has happened as a result is that much of Europe now exalts the Islamic contribution to European civilization while deliberately negating Europe's Judeo-Christian heritage. That again. On the one hand, according to Yor, Europe has allowed Islam to flourish in the name of political correctness and multiculturalism. At the same time, Europeans have come to despise themselves and their own culture, thus bringing their own collapse even closer. Another consequence of this conspiracy, and this is a very important idea for Yor, is the promotion of what she calls the cult of Palestinianism. And this has generated a resurgence of what she calls anti-Americanism and anti-Semitism. This would appear bad enough, but it gets worse, because, according to Yor, the ultimate objective of the Euro-Arab Axis is to convert Europe into a basis for jihad terrorism against Israel and the United States. So now you know another reason why Britain should not sign up to the single European currency. Why have Europe's leaders acquiesced in their own destruction? She cites various reasons. One, naturally, is a greedy desire for Arab oil. Another is a desire to appease terrorism. Another is simply the submissive dhimmi attitude, as she calls it, of European politicians who bowed their heads before Islam, just like their predecessors did once upon a time in the Caliphate. At first sight, this is total barking nonsense. It's something like the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. In fact, there is now a document called The Project, which was found in Switzerland within the last 2 years, which supposedly outlines a very similar plot, basically, to take over Europe's institutions by the Muslim Brotherhood. The origins of this document, well, no one knows the origins, but the conclusions that people can take from it are another matter. As we know, the absurdity of these kind of ideas does not prevent them from being taken seriously. It never has done in history. The strange thing is, or perhaps it's not so strange, is her book has been praised by historians such as Ferguson and Martin Gilbert, who, whatever their political ideas, are supposed to be historians, and you would expect to recognise gibberish when they see it. She's also, Yor has spoken at various US congressional committees on sort of Islamic issues and terrorism issues, which are the same thing, as we know. To understand how Yor's ideas could be taken seriously, we need to consider the different ideological agendas which these kind of ideas serve. Because if the Eurasian nightmare is a paranoid fantasy, it is also a politically convenient fantasy. And it seems to me there are various interested parties who find the idea of Eurabia compelling. To hardline Zionists, the concept of Eurabia is a pseudo-explanation for Europe's supposed tilt towards the Palestinians. Not much of a tilt, I don't think, especially nowadays, but anyway, it's another story. But the tilt is still enough to antagonize people like Yor, who basically do not believe Palestinians should exist and should have any state or recognition at all. Eurabian fantasies are also shared by far-right and neo-fascist groups like the Belgian Vlaams Belang, which has been making overtures towards Israel and the Belgian Jewish vote in recent years. So in this context, the enthusiasm for Eurabia represents an ideological shift within neo-fascism and the far-right, in which Islamophobia is increasingly emerging as an alternative to anti-Semitism. A brief example of what I mean is an interview that Nick Griffin gave last year, in which he explicitly rejected anti-Semitism, telling his interviewer, "We are deeply concerned about the mainly, though not exclusively, French elite project to morph the EU, Turkey, and the Maghreb into Eurabia. That Yor is 100% right about this. If this now far advanced scheme comes to fruition, then it would in turn lead to the Islamification of the whole European continent." Griffin, in the same interview, declared what he called the historic Islamic threat to Europe as the great issue and decision of our time. Other proponents of the Eurabian nightmare have made similar claims. There's actually very little of the BNP's critiques of Iran that would be out of place in the writings of Matt Yor, Robert Spencer, Oriana Fallaci, or even the former liberal Melanie Phillips. All these commentators share the same perception that Europe's cultural suicide is proof of the failure of multiculturalism. In their view, by failing to recognize the cultural incompatibility of Islamic and European values because of the political correctness of Europeans, Europeans have allowed a backward culture to take root in Europe, and that culture is growing and now threatens to overwhelm the continent. So in this sense, Eurabia reflects a wider shift from pseudo-biological notions of racial inferiority and mongolization to questions of cultural superiority and inferiority that have helped shape the idea of the clash of civilizations that we've heard in recent years. All this has become dangerously intertwined with anti-terrorism, so that cultural and religious difference, whether real or imagined, becomes a potential threat not just to national identity, but to national security. A point I tried to make in my article is that this new emphasis on cultural pollution by Muslim immigrants is actually part of an old framework that has been used in many different contexts. For example, in the early 20th century, Italians were regarded in a very similar way. Italian immigrants coming to the United States, they were regarded as being, they couldn't assimilate, they couldn't integrate, therefore they were dangerous. Mexicans in Europe, in America right now, are being described in the same way by people like Samuel Huntington, the author of the Clash of Civilizations thesis. So it's almost like a kind of grammar, it seems sometimes, that you can simply take from one particular group and transplant it onto another. I don't think it's quite as simple as that, but I think that is an element of it. Some of the most prominent proponents of the Eurasian nightmare are to be found in the United States. That shouldn't be surprising. To neoconservative proponents of the Fourth World War, which they look forward to so eagerly, the spectre of a collapsing Europe is a warning to the United States population, on one hand, of what can happen unless we fight. And it's also a justification for permanent war against militant Islam. Militant Islam, quite often, as being Islam to a lot of these people. So if the Islamic takeover of Europe is proof of Europe's loss of cultural or civilizational confidence, Eurabia serves to legitimize that agenda. Eurabians often argue that an aging European population's addiction to the welfare state has ushered in the Trojan horse of unlimited immigration. That Trojan horse brings with it cultural values which are different to ours and therefore could be transmitted in that way. So according to these people, not only are Europeans not breeding enough to transmit their cultural values to the future generations, but they're too old and too fond of their pensions and social security benefits. These will have to be paid for by younger immigrant workers who will come from Muslim countries. So the result is total disintegration and the end of Europe. That, in a nutshell, is the nightmare that awaits the continent. What solutions do the Eurabians propose for this nightmare? Pessimism is built into it, for one thing. Most of the stuff that I've read on this, it's going to end badly. It just is. But some commentators have suggested that we could re-Christianize Europe, whatever that means. Arianna Fallaci actually went on a visit to the Pope. Arianna Fallaci is an atheist, but she has put a lot of faith in the idea that the Pope will somehow bring about some kind of re-Christianization of Europe, which will help to revitalize European culture and repel the Muslim wars. Others have demanded a reassertion of what they call core liberal values and an explicit rejection of multiculturalism in favor of more aggressively assimilationist policies towards immigrants. Some of these policies are already being pursued in various European countries. But to the hardcore proponents of Eurabia, any attempts at integration, assimilation, and liberal reassertion, as they call it, must be accompanied by restrictions on Muslim immigration. But even restrictions might not be enough. At the far end of the scale is the specter of expulsions and what population transfer, something that would echo what took place in Christian Spain in the 16th century, when the so-called Moriscos, or Little Moors, were expelled en masse following the expulsion of the Jewish population. That scenario is one possible consequence of the Eurabian nightmare, if this process of shaping the Muslim enemy is allowed to continue unchecked and Eurabia continues to gain intellectual credibility that it doesn't deserve. That's all I've got to say on this subject.